Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop on this Fine Food Friday, April 2nd. I'm Ray Graff. Today we welcome back Anissa Waheed of Tara Kitchen in Schenectady, Troy, and Gilderland. She has appeared on Beat Bobby Flay and Guy's Grocery Games, and Anissa is with us today to answer your questions about Moroccan cuisine and cooking methods. Give us a call. 800-348-2551 is the number. 1-800-348-2551. You can email us also, voxpop@wamc.org, voxpop@wamc.org. But that number again is 800-348-2551. Always great to have Anissa Waheed on this program, and we will do just that right after the news. Hello once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. Always great to welcome back Anissa Waheed of Tara Kitchen to this program. After spending 14 years in New York City, Anissa returned to Schenectady, and in 2008, she and her husband opened a Moroccan and Indian boutique named Tara. Then in 2011, Tara Kitchen opened its doors. And she also operates a location now in Troy at a new location in Gilderland. And the expansion continues on and on and on. Tara Kitchen has been named the best Mediterranean restaurant by Capital Region Living. Anissa has been featured on two national TV shows, Beat Bobby Flay and Guy's Grocery Games. And if you have a question about Moroccan cuisine, this is the person to ask. Our number is 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. Or you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. But again, the number is 800-348-2551. Anissa Waheed, welcome back. How are you?
I am good. Thank you for having me, Ray. How are you?
It's great to have you here, as always. And I asked you this the last time you were on, and I'll ask you again, because I understand the expansion continues. How is it that during a year-long plus pandemic that has decimated so many businesses, and specifically so many food businesses and restaurants, have you been able to manage to expand? And while you're answering that, I'll figure out how to ask you why you expanded into this new location. But tell me how you managed to flourish.
Well, it's not so much about flourishing. It's about sort of planning, and it's about, betting. So part of it is gambling, right? And looking at the pandemic last year, Gilderland was already in the works even before the pandemic had started. So
right. That
was on the books. And, it was a question for us whether we move forward or not. And, looking at what the projections were from the CDC and how long they thought this was going to go on and those kind of things, and then taking that gamble that we were actually going to come out on the other side of it and just sort of gritting and bearing as we go through that hardship. So Gilderland, for me, was not necessarily a choice of not doing it. We knew it was going to be difficult, but we knew we had to do it. And now moving into this year, we're actually opening a new location within the next 8 weeks in Wildwood, New Jersey. And that actually came about because we have a business plan to do 5 new locations in the next 5 years. So looking at the market, where are people going? How are people traveling? And what's happening with the economy and all of those sort of things? It made sense to get into an area which was heavily traveled and with people trying to be local and those kind of things. So we're not necessarily always looking at, we just want to open a restaurant. It's a lot of planning. It's a lot of studies. It's a lot of, market research kind of things that go into it.
All that being said, and
yeah.
we'll talk about your 5-year plan in a minute. Why there are a lot of places that are well trafficked. Wildwood's pretty far away, and how did you manage to pick that one?
Yeah, well, we like going to Wildwood. So I think for 10 years now, my entire business model and my entire business plan has hedged on the fact that I only do things that I like to do, and I only do things that I want to do, right? So, everything that we do, we look at the impact on our life and we look at the impact on the kids and our other businesses, and then we work backwards of that. And, you know, Wildwood is just a great place to vacation. We like to be there. We spend a chunk of time there. So we just thought it would be a great way to sort of get into a market that's different from upstate New York. And, you know, it's huge numbers down there. So I think it would be a really great, fun testing ground to be across the beach and cooking my food, right? Mm-hmm. And again, I think Wildwood is coming up a little bit sooner than we would have ever anticipated because of the pandemic. You know, markets have shifted in such a big way that we have to constantly be able to change and pivot and, you know, make decisions based on what's happening.
You know, I have one experience with Wildwood, and it has stayed with me for, oh gosh, probably 45 years or more.
Oh, wow.
And it's not all that pleasant. However, that's not your fault. But my question from a business standpoint is there enough traffic in the off summer months?
So you're absolutely right. So this business will only work during the summer. And we'll probably be open there a couple of the shoulder months, as you know, as it's referred to in Wildwood, and the rest of the winter it'll be just shut down. So that's pretty much how most of the businesses in Wildwood operate. And you know, like once October comes, you start to see a lot of the places shut down and, you know, winterize, those kind of things. So I just think that it's a great way to sort of expand without overextending what we are already doing, you know, having a crew that's sort of a summer crew that works in Wildwood, and most of us will rotate out of Wildwood. So it's a great fun way for also the staff here in upstate to kind of make a rotation down in Jersey by the beach. And then, you know, come winter, we'll all refocus back upstate. So, I mean, these are all theories, and let's see how 2021 in Wildwood goes.
Well, you know, I got to say, given your track record, I assume it'll do very, very well. In the early 70s, when I was a kid, my father, we had a house, my grandmother's house in Hempstead, Long Island, and it was decided by my mom and dad that my brother and me and my mom and dad would go to Wildwood. And I'm known as having kind of a short temper here, and I can be a little grumpy. Well, my father was even more so, and we drove all the way through all the traffic to Wildwood, and it was a couple of hours at least in the hot sun. And we got there and drove through, and my father said, "Oh, it's too crowded." And we turned around and went and never got to the beach. So that's my one Wildwood story. I hope you're having more fun there than I did.
No. You know, it's not, there's a great local community, but of course, it also has huge throngs of people. You know, they have something like 9 million visitors over the course of an entire year,
yeah.
A few million during the summer. And, you know, they're connected to Ocean City, Atlantic City, and Cape May for the south. And so I think, you know, well, there's a huge pool of people. You just have to be a little bit more organized trying to get into Wildwood over the summer. And to be honest with you, Ray, that's really one of the reasons why we decided to do the business down there, because all of last summer we kept trying to get into Wildwood, and it was so difficult, whether it's, you know, hotels booked out or rooms not available, and just the traffic that of people coming into that town,
yeah,
is remarkable. So I think, you know, it's going to be a great spot to introduce a new style of cuisine.
Well, I predicted it years ago that the empire would grow and grow and grow, and Anissa Waheed of Tara Kitchen fame, the empire is growing. Now, you said you got a 5-year plan, 5 new locations in 5 years?
Yes, absolutely. What's next?
That's a lot of overhead, though, right?
Well, yeah, but, you know, you're running a business to pay for that overhead, right? I'm not paying it out of... So that's a whole nother strategy also that... I mean, this is no different than anybody else growing a business. We're very, very fiscally responsible. We're, you know, we have full-time people who work and ensure that things are in place and financially it's viable. You know, banks are involved. There's so much that goes into, expanding any business, and especially a restaurant business in this environment, is very, very tricky. So I think the model we set up 10 years ago and the process we have in place and, you know, some of the hard work we did back then is sort of all coming into play now. You know, we can sort of operate very minimally for larger shares of the profits, those kind of things. So, you know, we have some oversight. It's not just Cookie and Issa going off and doing stuff.
Well, one thing I've never thought of you as Cookie. I think you got a plan. Hey, let's take a quick break and then we'll talk food. Anissa Waheed of Tara Kitchen is here. 800-348-2551. If you want to talk about Moroccan cuisine, etc., with the great Anissa Waheed, we'll be back. Food Friday, Vox Pop. It's 800-348-2551. Ray Graff today, joined by Anissa Waheed of Tara Kitchen. Nobody's ever called you Cookie in your life, right?
Oh, plenty.
Really?
That's my brother.
Okay. This email came in from Betsy in Schenectady. Betsy says, just in case I'm not able to get through on the phone lines, I wanted to get these two questions out. When you make your charred broccoli with garlic, do you roast the broccoli or pan fry on the stove?
We pan fry it. So it's broccoli and some garlic, a little bit of cumin, black pepper, coriander powder, and a touch of salt. That's it. And a little bit of oil.
And then Betsy writes, when will Cotti rolls return to the menu? You know, there are several of us who are in serious withdrawal. And that is from Betsy in Schenectady.
Just call me, Betsy. We'll get you Cotti rolls. Well, last October, we had suspended our lunch menu purely from a lack of, you know, lunch crowd, the office crowd sort of not being in downtown in all of our locations. But yeah. I'm hoping now that with some of the dine-in coming back, you know, strongly, and some of the office people returning, we'll probably be bringing back our lunch menu sooner than later.
Okay, what's a Cotti roll again?
It's a wrap. It's a sort of a flaky bread. It kind of looks similar to a burrito, but it has and we have many different kinds of fillings with a sauce that go, and it's definitely a cult favorite. So I know lots and lots of people are waiting for those, hopefully coming back shortly.
And I'm sure back in the old days when you used to come to the studio, you brought them, but my memory is not what it was, Anissa Waheed. All right, let's go to the phones. 800-348-2551 is the number, and Mary is in LaGrangeville. Mary, you're on.
Hi. Thank you for picking up. I just wanted to suggest that, Anissa, I know restaurant people do not have any time on their hands. You guys work extremely hard. But if there were any opportunity for you to visit Millbrook, New York, it's such a quaint, lovely town. It gets a lot of traffic, especially on the weekends. It could otherwise be sleepy, but, you know, as you said, people are moving. They're moving northward. They're moving out of the cities. And we're up in the beautiful historic Hudson Valley, and it's worth a trip. And Millbrook is certainly worth a trip. And there's a restaurant there that don't have anyone occupying it yet. And you might, if you can get a chance, come up, have a look at it. It really is a lovely restaurant as well, and it's right on the main drag.
Mary, do you work for the Millbrook Chamber of Commerce by any chance?
No, I'm actually an art teacher.
Ah, well, there you go. What do you think, Anissa?
Everything is worth a look. I will definitely be there, Mary. I will definitely drive up or down. I'm not entirely sure where Millbrook is, but we will definitely make a trip.
Well, Mary, thank you very much for the call. The number here is 800-348-2551. If you have a cooking question, or I guess a business question, for Anissa Waheed of Tara Kitchen, and you can also email us at voxpop@wamc.org. Let's go to Frank, who's traveling in New Jersey. Frank, how you doing?
Hey, I'm doing good. I just had a quick question. Are there very many vegan options in Moroccan cuisine? I know that up in the North Country, when restaurants open, they just don't seem to care. And I think they're missing a huge part of the market. Any input on that?
Yeah, as a matter of fact, we have a Moroccan cuisine inherently is very, very good for people practicing vegan eating. And in, our menu also has a huge variety of vegan food. You know, most Moroccan food does not have dairy in it. It doesn't have, you know, a lot of cheese and those kind of sort of products or butter, all that. So inherently, it leans towards being vegan. So you definitely check our menu out, and you know, there are lots of recipes online as well that I'm sure you can find that have vegan food. We do definitely cater to a large group of our vegan friends here in upstate.
Okay, Frank.
Okay, thank you.
Hey, thanks a lot for the call. Our number is 800-348-2551. Anissa Wahid is our guest from Tara Kitchen. 800-348-2551. The email address is voxpop@wamc.org. And Tom wrote in, I love to cook and love Moroccan food, but haven't tried to cook it yet. Can you recommend a great starter dish that captures the essence of Moroccan food?
That's a great question. And I think, you know, probably one of the easiest and quintessential Moroccan tagines to cook would be a chicken with preserved lemons and green olives. And, you know, for the, there are a few different variations to it, but for the most part, it's a very, very simple dish. The key ingredient being the preserved lemons, which I'm sure you can procure somewhere online or during the summer, even make them at home, which could be a fun experiment. But that's a really easy tagine to make. And if you go to our website, there, I have a blog, and you can actually watch a video on how to make that tagine.
And the preserved lemons, which you actually showed me for the first time and I got to taste here on this program, are amazing. How do you preserve them? If you wanted to do it at home, how would you do that?
Yeah, I mean, you know, preserving the lemons is a fairly simple process. You take whole lemons, you get them cleaned up, dry, you quarter them, keeping the base intact, and then you stuff it with salt. And then put it in a mason jar and top it off with a little bit of lemon juice and just kind of put it in the back of your closet or your cupboard so that the lemon starts to break down. And, you know, it's once the fermentation kicks in, you'll see the rind sort of take on a different color. It's softer, mellower in flavor, but it takes on a whole new flavor profile from the fermentation process. So there, you know, you definitely can't substitute a preserved lemon with just a fresh squeezed lemon or the skin of a fresh lemon, because it has to go through that lacto-fermentation process. Fairly simple, just takes a little bit of time to actually go through it.
Anissa Wahid of Tara Kitchen joins us today. What does the salt do in the preserving process?
That's what it's breaking down, you know, and starting the whole fermentation and preserving the lemon from actually getting bacteria and all of those kind of the bad bacteria, the ones that you don't want. So that's helping create the new flavor profile and that kind of stuff.
So, you know, I fell for you have, for those who don't know, and I think you still have this, Anissa Wahid has a line of spices and things like preserved lemons that are sold in grocery stores. You still have that, right?
Yes.
Well, your first appearance, you brought preserved lemons, and I loved them. You brought the chicken dish with the preserved lemons. And I bought some of the preserved lemons and used them, and I made a crack. They said, oh, you know, I eat them right with a spoon. Well, one of the people in the front office a year or two ago said, you know, I listened to you, and I got a jar of the stuff, and I ate it with a spoon, and it's not that good. And I said, you know, you're not supposed to eat it with a spoon. It's really it's made for cooking stuff, and you really don't need very much.
Yeah, I mean, it's a strong flavor, the lemon, the salt, and, you know, one of the things that we noticed when we first started the restaurant 10 years ago, it's not necessarily a flavor profile that most of us are used to in the U.S., and it took a little bit of getting used to for the customers, but in Morocco especially, well, the lemons are different, and They use them, you know, extensively, and it's used in many, many, many different recipes, and people obviously love them, and in fact, love seeing the pieces of the lemons in the food. So they eat it with the bread. I mean, there's a whole, component of eating the preserved lemon that we just don't have in our eating style here. So what I started to do years ago was take, once the lemons are preserved, I take all of that, I blend it up into a puree form, and then we spoon the little bit of the puree into our dishes as we're cooking them. So it flavors the dish, but you don't get the textural element of the lemon in the dish. And that was actually a lot more successful than when we were trying to cook it the more traditional way of using the rind of the lemon. So it takes a little bit of getting used to, and it's probably not for everyone, but used correctly and in the right proportion to the other ingredients in the dish, there's no replicating that flavor profile. It's pretty fantastic.
I agree. It is spectacular stuff, and a little goes a very long way when you're first experimenting with it. Our guest today is Anisa Waheed of Tara Kitchen. The number is 800-348-2551. Moroccan cuisine today, and if you have never been to Tara Kitchen, it's spreading like wildfire. It started in Schenectady, it's in Troy, it's in Guilderland, soon to be in Wildwood, New Jersey. Now, you've been at this for about 10 years, the restaurant portion of it, right?
Yes. Actually, January 31st, 2022 will be 10 whole years.
It's amazing. And, you know, part of what you have done is educating people. And frankly, I mean, in a lot of places, there is not a Moroccan, any place where you get good Mediterranean food of any kind. And so one of the things you have done is educate people. How have tastes changed in that 10 years?
You know, that's really interesting. You asked that, and we've definitely noticed how people perceive the food and consume the food. When I first started in Schenectady 10 years ago, we had a fairly limited small menu, and we struggled with it. We struggled, an example being the preserved lemons. You know, we struggled on the best way to sort of introduce it into the market. The harissa, which is a North African hot sauce, we sort of struggled with that. You know, is it spicy? Is it not spicy enough? Is it warm enough, not warm enough, taste, you know, all of those kind of things. And sort of the pairing of the fresh fruits with the cooking, all of it was so new. And, what's interesting 10 years into this is not only is the demand for it pretty high, but, you know, people have really embraced the style of cooking and the flavor profiles. And I think that in general, how people eat and what they're eating has expanded nationally, but definitely locally for us, we've found a niche where people definitely love this flavor now.
I mean, one of the beautiful things you have done is you have traveled the world and you've taken little bits of this cuisine and that cuisine and some American elements and put it all together. Are you finding now, 10 years in, that there is a section of your customer base that wants to be more traditional?
No, not necessarily. In fact, I think that the way I cook and, you know, the way the food appeals to me is actually being embraced more and more across the board all over our country, right? In all kinds of cooking styles. Like anywhere you go now, you can go to a bar and you can find not just tacos, but, you know, you could find harissa on somebody's menu at a bar, or you find the yogurt sauce. The raita is everywhere. And so I think that the way people eat is sort of all, you know, turning into this huge, massive melting pot, just like how we are. So the purists, I'm sure there's, you know, people who are purists as well, but this is reflective. The way I cook and what works in the restaurant is very reflective of who we're becoming and what we're eating.
Anisa Waheed joins us on this Food Friday. The number is 800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. Email address is voxpop@wamc.org. We go to Nina in East Hoosick. Hello there, Nina.
Hey, Ray. Thanks for taking my call. I can't believe the serendipity of this, synchronicity is what I mean to say, of this.
Love it.
I have a bunch of organic lemons, and I'm thinking, I'd like to know how to make them into preserved lemons. I don't have, and I thought that before the show.
Wow.
And there you are, and you're talking about it. Yeah, wonderful. So I don't have the internet in my home, and I heard what you said, but I would appreciate it if you could please quite specifically explain how you do it. I'm not sure if what you were saying, one question I have is, do you scoop out the insides of the lemon and just have the rinds and pack them with salt, or are you leaving the split lemons intact? So if you could specifically lay out the recipe and how long you leave them in salt, I'd really appreciate it, because I have my lemons right here. Thank you.
Yeah, sure. So the idea is you don't want to scoop anything out. You're literally taking the whole lemon, you're quartering it, keep the base intact, and then you fill it as much as you possibly can with salt, you know, pack it as tightly as you can with salt, and then put it in your jar, and then keep filling the jar up with as many lemons as that will fit in there. And, you know, fill it with some lemon juice as well, so that it helps in the breaking down process. And in terms of how long it takes, there's so many variables to it. There's temperature, there's how thick is the skin of your lemon, and, you know, at what point it takes over from the fresh lemon to the preserved. We have seen them go as fast as 3 weeks to sometimes as long as 6 months. You know, we literally are constantly preserving lemons in buckets because we go through so much of it, that all year round we're doing it. And at different points of the year, it's different. It takes a different length of time. So now that summer is coming up, maybe if you're doing about 3 lemons in a mason jar, maybe it takes you about 3 to 4 weeks. And, you know, visually you will start to see a change in how the rind looks, and then you'll be able to tell. It should turn soft, it should turn slightly discolored, and then once they're done, you can taste them, and if it's lost its sort of bright, fresh, citrusy taste, then you know that, you know, they're ready to sort of cook with. Now, in terms of cooking with preserved lemons, traditionally, the pulp at that point is scooped out and discarded, and only the rind is used to cook with. So you take the rind, and you know, you can slice it up or dice it up, and then use it in the food, and maybe find another use for the pulp, or just discard it if you don't find another. Well, you can clean copper with it, and you know, there's lots of stuff you can do with it. But I personally prefer to keep all of that good stuff. And blending the preserved lemons with the pulp and the excess lemon juice and the salt and all that stuff sort of gives you this confit that you can then use in, you know, spoonfuls of it in many different recipes. Then you can make it into marinade. You can spoon it into soups, make drinks with it. It becomes really, really versatile. And you don't have any loss of product.
That is absolutely fabulous. I really got it now, how it's used. Now, I did have, and this is a slightly different question, I used the juice of the lemon actually in some homemade kombucha that I make for myself and then to give to people.
Yeah.
And so I have the skin. So I completely what you said, that you do it whole, and I won't repeat it. I understand. But is there something you can do with just the skins? Because now I have them. I use the juice of some of these organic lemons.
Yeah, I would try preserving the... So is it fresh skin?
Yeah.
That you just sort of... Yeah, yeah,
I use the juice, right? So then I can... And
right.
I scooped out the... So what I have left are the shells, you could say, or the skin of these organic lemons. It's different than the recipe you gave me, which I understand. But is there something I can just do with skins themselves?
Yeah, you can definitely, try and preserve them as well. They will break down just as a whole lemon will. You can also try to maybe candy them, put some sugar and some more lemon juice and sliver them up and then bake them. And then use the candied lemon rind in drinks or in salads and that kind of stuff. You can zest them and dry the peels and zest it so that you have some the zest to add into your dishes as you're cooking.
That's great.
How do you dry them? You just let them stay out? Do you have to use a dehydrator?
Either works. A dehydrator is probably much, much, much faster, but you can also, just dry them on a sheet pan or a plate or something, or you can lightly bake them as well so that you evaporate some of the water and then put them out in the sun. Many, many ways to experiment with that.
Nina, thanks for the call. We appreciate it very much. Now, Anissa Waheed, before we go to the break, do you watch much late-night TV?
Not really, no. I there are a couple of shows that I watch, and that's about it.
Very late at night. Sometimes I'll get up, yeah. I'll have indigestion, I'll get up 2 a.m, I'll watch TV. They got these infomercials, and it occurs to me that if you clean copper with the pulp of preserved lemons, Anissa Waheed could have her own infomercial in the middle of the night. That's a product right there. What do you think?
Yeah, well, I hate waste. If you know anything about me, if you work anywhere around me, if you're part of my team, you will know that we are a zero waste company, highly, highly recycling company. There's no waste, where I am.
All right, well, listen, this is your new avenue to millions. All right, we'll take a break. 800-348-2551. Moroccan Cuisine with Anissa Waheed. We'll be right back. It's a Food Friday, 800-348-2551. If you have a question or comment for Anissa Waheed of Tara Kitchen from Schenectady, Troy, Gilderland, soon to be Wildwood, New Jersey, who knows where else, let's go to Layla in Mount Tremper. Layla, you're on.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I got to thinking when Ray referred briefly to Moroccan cuisine as Middle Eastern cuisine, I was thinking, well, no, it's probably North African cuisine.
I said Mediterranean, and then
You said Mediterranean, that's right. Yeah. Well, but then I'm thinking, yes, but these political geographical things are really recent anyway. And Moroccan food, as I understand it, as many cuisines are, has a lot of different influences, like Berber, like, I assume, French and Arab and so forth. So anyway, I'm wondering if at least you could comment on that.
Oh, that's so true. And Anissa and I have talked about this many times. And Anissa is a world traveler, so she loves to talk about this. Go ahead.
And I have been to Morocco, and it was amazing. I was in Marrakesh. I've been several times, and I just loved the food. It was amazing.
I absolutely agree. Morocco is one of my absolute favorite countries to visit, not just for the food, but also for the land and the people and the beaches and just the culture. All of it is just fascinating to me. And, Morocco is probably an ideal place for a confluence of all the different kinds of cuisines that has, was brought to Morocco because of the travel route. You have people coming from Europe, entering on North Africa or Africa through Morocco, through the north with Tangier and the Strait of Gibraltar, and then people coming from Rome and settling in Morocco for a long, long time. The spice routes, there's so many Indian influences in Moroccan food with the spices, tea, and from China, green tea is sort of the national drink of Morocco. Yeah. Highly influenced by, obviously, Chinese cuisine and the tea traders. So you're absolutely right. And I think one of the things that I personally love so much about this cuisine is it has components of a range of countries and a range of ingredients all coming together in such a beautiful way. And, going back to what Ray was talking earlier about, the purest and traditional recipes to sort of maybe using newer and fresher ingredients. But Moroccan food has been doing that stuff for centuries. So I think if anything, it's a fantastic way to sort of adapt that cooking style, because they're masters at it already.
And they're seeming to be somewhat relaxed about it.
I'm sorry?
Well, no, the people that I was staying with were just kind of relaxed about it, relaxed and creative and enjoying what was available in the market and what tasted good and all of that.
Yeah, I definitely have found that too. And like I said, in fact, I'm going to be doing an event with another very, very popular and famous chef, Rick Orlando, on April 8th, where we've created a menu that is sort of marries the traditional Sicilian and traditional Moroccan cuisines into, you know, one menu. And we're very, very excited about doing that.
Oh, he's wonderful, too. They catered our wedding, so that sounds like a great, great thing.
Small world. Well, Leila, thanks a lot for the call. Anissa Waheed of Tara Kitchen joins us, 800-348-2551, if you have a question for Anissa. So this business with Rick Orlando, man, that guy gets around. This is April 8th, and what is going on exactly?
We put together, you know, I reached out to Rick and I said, hey, let's try and do an event together where we can sort of combine our cooking styles. And, you know, I've always said that to me, a lot of the stuff that I'm doing and cooking is so similar to Italian style of cooking and ingredients. And we put our heads together and came up with a really fabulous menu, which we're going to be presenting. All the tickets are sold out, so I'm sorry about that.
Okay. That's all right.
But we're going to be doing this on April 8th in my Troy location, which, we'll cook together that day and has a wine pairing, all that kind of stuff. So it's going to be very exciting, a whole experience for the whole evening, basically.
Well, that's fantastic. And it's good to get Rick back in the kitchen a little bit, too. You know, he had the restaurant going for all that time, and we want to make sure he stays busy. So that's good.
He's doing great. He's doing absolutely great.
The number here is 800-348-2551. Anissa Waheed of Tara Kitchen. Going back to Wildwood, New Jersey for a moment, and going back to your sort of standard menu that you have, and it changes from time to time, and it has, to some extent, there has been some evolution over the 10 years you have been open. Are you going to tweak it at all for the summer Wildwood crowd?
Yeah, 100%. In fact, my kids were talking about this last night. We will definitely, tweak the menu for Wildwood, bring in more seafood, you know, see what's available locally that I can sort of work with over there. And depending on the crowds and what people, you know, that's something that we try to do across the board anyway. And what's interesting is, all the three locations we have in upstate New York are only about, 15 miles apart from each other. And the customer base is so different in each location, and what they eat and how they eat is so different. So it's really interesting. So I'm excited to see what we learn in New Jersey. Well, right off the gate, we'll start with some newer items there that, we haven't tried up here yet.
I mean, how do you do that research? Presumably you have been going there with the family for several years now, so you have the vibe of the whole place. But, I mean, in the restaurant business, I assume when you make a menu change or you make an addition, there is an economic risk to some extent. And how do you know you're making the right play here?
You really just don't. And, you're sort of using a lot of past customer feedback and knowledge, and we have an idea of what customers expect from us. And even at that, there's so many times when I try out a recipe and I think it's fabulous, the staff thinks it's fabulous, and then it just doesn't sort of catch on in the restaurant for one reason or the other. And the idea is not necessarily to get hung up on whether you love it or don't love it. And, the idea is how is it perceived in the market, and how do people and what their reaction to that is. So we're always, when we launch a new menu, new item, we're sort of ready to either pull it or, you know, make adjustments to it as we get feedback. And the good thing about my kind of business is it's immediate. People let you know immediately when something's not working well. They're not shy about that.
No, it's so true. But
we're constantly.
But I mean, things sometimes take a while to catch on, though. How long do you let
it
go?
I mean, part of that is, you know, I rely a lot on my gut, and there are some certain measurable item, you know, measurable time that you can say, okay, you know, we've tried this item on the menu for X number of weeks and it's still not catching on. So maybe it's time to nix it. Sometimes it takes maybe a little bit longer. It's having, having sort of the faith and idea, and then also understanding why it might not be catching on. Is it the way you're presenting it? Are you not talking enough about it? Or is something wrong with it? And we do, I test every single thing extensively. So, you know, we go into it with a lot of work and effort already in play. And then if it's not working, then we try to dissect why not and give it a last shot, and then, you know, decide if it's going to come off the menu. But that's very, very rarely happened, to be honest with you.
Anissa Waheed joins us today. Take me into this testing process. Do you just put it in front of the kids and say, all right, let me know what you think?
Sort of. I get an idea for a new dish that I want to cook or a new flavor profile I want to try. And then I sort of get into the kitchen and start, you know, with the version that's sort of coming in my mind. And then we keep tweaking it and making changes. The staff eats a lot of it. The kids eat a lot of it. I might send it to my sister, my harshest critic, and see what she has to say. And, you know, and then we go from there. Like, some recipes are really, really easy, and, you know, it just sort of comes and you're able to just do, you know, nail it in the first round. But other recipes take a lot of time to come together. It's a very different process, but every single day I'm testing something new. It might or might not actually make it on a menu or as a special, but I'm constantly cooking.
Now, in my dim recollection, a half a lifetime ago, when you were in New York City, you were in either publishing or advertising, right? Or am I wrong?
Publishing. Yeah, publishing.
Specifically, and maybe it was your dad's, some advertising in your family comes to me. But in advertising, there are focus groups and there are ways of testing things. Are you using any scientific methodology? Do you have a spreadsheet out and say, okay, well, we tried this dish and we have sold X number and, okay, this is not making the grade?
No, we don't. We have, you know, I think when it comes to the food part of what I do, that's such a creative process and it's such a human process to me. You know, it's not unheard of for me to like just pack something up. If you come into the restaurant to pick up your dinner, I might just be like, hey, here's an extra container of something I'm testing. Can you just email me what you think? The cooking part of it and the tasting, it's just such a human contact part of it that I'm actually listening and hearing and, you know, seeing what people are telling me about the food that I'm putting out. I think in terms of being extremely scientific, that part of it and the measurement part of it, I leave for the business end of how we run things. You know, that's where making sure we're running a tight ship and fiscally responsible and all of those kind of things. I think, that I leave for that end of the business.
And in our conversations, and we've had many, I get the sense that you do enjoy the business end of it as well. Do you still enjoy the cooking aspect?
Yes, yes. I mean, this is like, I am so blessed because this is such a perfect avenue for a person like me who likes to be very, very creative, but is also, I thrive on the challenges of being an entrepreneur and growing and, expanding and running a business, and last year surviving the pandemic and making sure that, we didn't sort of succumb to some of the problems that the pandemic brought. I mean, those are all things that are very exciting for me. So it's great. I put on my cooking and creative hat at 10 in the morning when I'm in the kitchen. And then when I leave at 2, I'm back to my, I put on my business hat, and it's great. I get to live like two personalities.
Are you still getting 8 hours of sleep a night?
Absolutely. How else do you think I operate?
Well, I don't know. It's amazing to me. Let's go to Don in Mount Tremper. Don, you got a minute or two here. Go ahead.
Hey, yeah, I had a question. In 1971, some friends and I traveled to Marrakesh, and we had what we were told was a camel burger. Is that something that is truly served there, or we were just tricked?
Actually, it's truly served there. And this last trip that I went to Morocco, and it was November of 2019, we went to a butcher shop and we saw the the camel meat hanging off his storefront. I personally have never had it, and I might have slightly traumatized my two young daughters taking them to the butcher shop. But we did see it. Yes, I do believe it's a real thing.
All right, Don.
Thank you.
All right, Don. Thank you very much for the call. All right, Anissa Waheed, we have about 3 minutes left here. Tell us now, do you have a timetable for the opening in Wildwood?
Yeah, we're projecting May 11th as the opening date, so we get ourselves ready and to operate, for the Memorial Day weekend rush. Hopefully all goes well. I've been in contact with a lot of the city people in Wildwood. Everyone's been super helpful and, making sure that we're sort of getting all this documents and licenses and permits. We literally just made the decision a few weeks ago, so it's moving extremely fast and all hands on deck.
Will you be there all summer? I mean, you have so many things to watch out for and so many businesses going. Will you be in Wildwood?
Yeah. There'll definitely be parts of times when I'm in Wildwood, but obviously I have a huge need up here as well, so we'll be doing a little bit of traveling and that kind of stuff. I tend to act and then figure out how to do it, so
Well, I mean, from a tax perspective, you could probably write off most of the summer vacation now, right?
There you go. See, now you're thinking like me, Ray.
Oh, don't worry. It'll take me several millennia to think like you. I'm in radio. You're making real good money. Anissa Waheed, how do people find out more about Tara Kitchen?
Visit us on our website, tarakitchen.com. You can see all our locations, see all the menus that we're working on, the food and, different TV stuff. My cookbook is in the works right now, so there's a lot of information you can get.
You got 30 seconds now. You talked about this cookbook a year or two ago. I'm surprised. This thing's not done yet. What's up?
Oh, it takes so long. It takes so long. And, of course, last year, it was completely on the back burner, but we've put a team together and we have people sort of working on it and that kind of stuff. So I'm hoping it releases next summer for my 10th anniversary of the Schenectady location open. So that's our target date that we're working with right now.
Anissa Waheed, it is always a great pleasure to have you here. Best of luck. Enjoy the summer. Catch a couple of waves. Do some surfing. And we will talk to you. Hopefully you don't get hurt. We'll talk to you in the fall, okay?
Thank you so much, Ray. Thank you for having me. Have a good day.
You too. Support comes from Cafe Capriccio, Albany, New York. The Rua family serving Albany since 1982. Their regional Italian cuisine now available for online ordering. CafeCapriccio.com for information. And Stone Ridge Orchard, Ulster County, a 200-year-old historic working farm, presenting Findings Weekend. Rare plants, garden antiques, handcrafts, and more. May 1st and 2nd, StoneRidgeOrchard.com. Once again, thanks to Anissa Waheed of Tara Kitchen for joining us today. Thank you for listening. Thanks for the calls. Thanks for the emails. Thanks to Zachary Malloy, who really did a great job this week. And I'm not surprised by that. You did real, as always. Thanks to Barb King, who screens the calls here on Food Friday. Our producer's Jackie Orchard. I'm Ray Graff. That's it. You made it through a whole week of my program. And God bless you for doing it. We'll try it again on Monday at 2. It's Medical Monday. Have a splendid weekend. Stand by now for the best of our knowledge.